Lacey Brooks.
Oh, boy. Lots of news. Boy, how long did Trump still keep talking?
Well, he eventually finished.
Tom, did you listen to the whole thing?
I couldn't get enough of it, John.
All right.
It lasted about as long as Mr. Wilson's Valentine's wish to his wife.
Lasted longer than it was McKinley. Who was that? The shortest presidency? Didn't the guy
William Henry Harrison.
Harrison. He got pneumonia and died a couple days later. I would say that here's an interesting thing for Cairo Radio. Do you keep broadcasting that, or do you tell people, hey, if you want to listen to it, switch over to our podcast, and then you could go to a stream, split the stream down, that's all. Because like some people might be like, you know what, I got enough of it. I got the general idea.
That's below your pay grade, John. Don't you worry about it.
That's the beauty of socialism, that everyone is equal, Tom. All right, here we go. We'll get to Trump in just a little bit, but more fallout from the Amazon announcement, which seemed to catch everybody by surprise.
That's right.
Even Todd over at GeekWire was like, geez, I can't. He's like, what? Nobody saw this coming, right? Yeah. So we know all about it for a number of years. Amazon said, hey, I want to put a headquarters somewhere. So New York kicked in $3 billion in tax cuts. New Jersey actually offered more, and so did parts of Maryland also offered more. But they said, no, we're going to go with New York. And then they started to get a lot of resentment from different folks there, both unions, Tom, and then also folks on the social justice warriors were in there screaming and yelling at all these meetings. I think a couple of days ago, a bunch of folks, social justice warriors that are unemployed, went in the afternoon to an Amazon location where people were working. It's a store in New York City, and screamed and yelled at the people that were working.
You make it sound like screaming and yelling is a bad thing, John. They're just protesting.
No, I understand, Tom. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Oh, you are.
No, I'm not.
That's why you did. Why don't you just say they protested?
Because there's a difference.
There's not a difference. It's a protest.
Well, why are you protesting the poor people that are working in Amazon store in New York City? Why are you yelling
symbolic.
At them?
It's symbolic, John. No, I mean, you go, the idea is go yell at protest the, go, where you want to protest.
No, go yell at the government. Let's see. So they pull out because Bezos goes, you know what? It's not working for us. I haven't
you
heard
want
an
to
official
be loved.
Thing. Well, sure. Everybody wants to be loved. So have we heard from the official statement from Amazon? Has anybody, do I have some sound that I can play that the person goes, we have decided we're going to go somewhere else. We wish them the best. Anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of any audio. Now, we have heard from the Amazon spokesman locally here, which I loved, which is he said, yeah, you know all those jobs? Don't get your hopes up, Seattle. They're not going to come back here. We're done. Our footprint is as big as it's going to get here. Uh-huh. And then he had to come out. Sorry, I misspoke. We have not decided where those jobs are going to go. They could come to Seattle. They could go anywhere.
Right. So
that's the official line we've heard from Amazon locally.
Right. Well, we are hearing from AOC, as she's known as, right? That's Alexandria Cortez. Her initial reaction to Amazon leaving New York.
I think it's incredible. I mean, it shows that everyday Americans still have the power to organize and fight for their communities. And they can have more say in this country than the richest man in the world.
So everyday Americans,
actually,
they did a poll.
That's pretty good.
They did a poll. 74% of blacks supported it. 59% of Hispanics supported it. 32% of whites supported it. So what you had is white, the everyday Americans. The white rich folks that lived in Manhattan didn't like the idea. But the poor, disadvantaged folks, economically, we keep hearing about them and their plight. Blacks and Hispanics. They wanted Amazon to be there. They were in favor of it, but they're not everyday folks. Everyday folks are the folks that are celebrating people like Alexandria Cortez.
Well, the idea here, I think, is it's pretty interesting that it's true. We talked about this yesterday. 70% of New Yorkers supported this idea,
yeah.
And Amazon was scared off by at most 30%. Just because you're not in favor of it doesn't mean that you're part of the protest movement. Basically, it's a small little protest that ended up getting them to pull up stakes, which is pretty powerful if you're part of that small protest.
And is that considered a success? Because what
from
Cortez,
their point of view, yes.
Right.
Now, you may think it's a long-term mistake. They interviewed a lot of people in Long Island where this was going to go,
yeah.
And they said that some people thought, oh, good, because we like the way life is right now, and
right.
We know, based on Seattle, how differently it would change.
Right.
And another guy, you know, right next door to her said, oh, my God, we are looking a gift horse in the mouth. This could have transformed our life, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
So it's people are split either way. It's just funny that I think as huge an organization as Amazon, who always does its due diligence,
mm-hmm.
didn't anticipate this and didn't, you know, sort of work that into their plans
mm-hmm.
to, you know, choose to stay there.
I think the tides rose faster than they expected. And
well,
I don't
maybe.
Think, that, yeah, and, you know, it's like a full moon. You get those anomalies, the full moon plus this, plus that. You had A bunch of people come out. Cortez, in particular, not that she directly did it,
but she's not that powerful.
Oh, I know. Okay, I'm so what she represents.
Gotcha.
Hold on.
Okay, fair enough.
So you have the rise of the socialist. You have the billionaires being considered to be bad people. You have all of that. Plus, you have Amazon during the Christmas season may or may not be exploiting workers. You get that kind of noise that goes with it, and then you get 50 hard left leaning Democrats to be elected into the House. All of those things together put all this pressure on Amazon, realizing maybe there's not a place for this sort of quasi-government capitalism that was supposed to exist there in New York. Cortez actually responded to the loss of jobs. She says,
we were subsidizing those jobs. So for the city was paying for those jobs. So frankly, if we were willing to give Amazon willing to give away $3 billion for this deal, we could invest those $3 billion in our district ourselves if we wanted to. We could hire out more teachers. We can fix our subways. We can put a lot of people to work for that money if we wanted to.
Right.
Additionally, those jobs, there was no guarantee that those jobs were for the New Yorkers that were here. We were looking at a deal that was not primarily putting the community first. And I think that we can absolutely come together to create an economic plan that actually invests in New Yorkers, in higher wages, and in a dignified life.
So the idea is that she won the day by protesting and Amazon ran away. Seems counterproductive.
Let's talk about this. Dig in a little deeper. She's saying that we were giving them $3 billion.
Yeah. No, I don't. It was
$3 billion. Put 30 pounds on her, Tom. We'd never hear from her again. Put 30 pounds on her. You'd never hear from her again.
Because she's pretty.
But she has absolutely no idea what she... If anyone
else... Is Shamasawant pretty?
No.
Okay, well, she is basically Shamasawant.
Shamasawant is... They're both very pretty in their own way.
Okay.
I'm going to back it up. Let me just hold on. They're both ridiculous because they both don't... But here's... If anyone else had said this, someone would have either responded immediately. Her spokespeople would have come forward and said, we misspoke. We'd like to reframe that. We'd like to explain what we mean by that. Again, here is the fallacy of this argument.
We were subsidizing those jobs. So for the city was paying for those jobs.
No, you weren't. Here's what you did. You gave them a tax break. They were going to generate $25 billion, and of the $25 billion, you were going to cut their taxes by three. You don't have $3 billion,
right,
Ms. Cortez. It's not like you've got the money sitting around to invest in schools. The money was going to be generated by Amazon, and then you were going to give them a break of $3 billion.
That's
the money. Now, Tom,
if
you were working for her, wouldn't you say to her, hey, you kind of misspoke on that, or you might want to take a 101 economics?
Yeah, I would say that's not the way to put it. You are...
No, it's not the way to put it. It's wrong.
You are bankrolling Amazon, and this is what a lot of... Again, we talked about this yesterday. A lot of economists on your side of the ledger,
think that basically
this is... companies sort of putting towns over the barrel by saying, okay, how many breaks are you going to give me? And there's no real strong, consistent follow through. Like we, the state of Washington, bent over backwards to accommodate Boeing, and then Boeing went ahead and set up South Carolina even more securely. So, I mean, those kinds of things are arguments that you can make. And there is a legitimate economic argument to make to say it may not be worth it to give Amazon $3 billion.
You're not giving it to them.
No. In tax breaks.
Right.
In tax breaks. Let me finish.
Yeah.
So the idea is that is what she's objecting to. I do think she makes a legitimate point, however, I'm saying, all those people that are in Long Island City right now thinking, oh, wow, we're going to be rich. The people that are going to be there that are going to get those jobs are probably not the people that are living in Long Island City right now. They're going to, as Seattle's discovered, it's an influx of newcomers, and it could disrupt Long Island City. That's a concern.
Her argument is completely capricious because the problem is it's not based on how the economics of it works. So you don't have $3 billion to invest somewhere else.
No,
got it. So she's completely wrong.
That part's right.
Completely wrong.
She's right in that. The workers in Long Island City were probably going to be displaced by outside workers, and we are giving them $3 billion in tax breaks.
So here's what happens.
Which we needn't do.
$150,000 employee comes into that neighborhood in Queens, And then you have a dry cleaner. You have a restaurant. You then have a dog walking service. You have a daycare service. You have clothing stores that come up. You have nails. Yeah, you have hair. You have salon.
And all
all of the stuff. So every one tech job equals seven jobs. Now, don't forget, those people that could be working in there are not working at all. So congratulations. You've driven 25,000 jobs away.
Yes.
And you have told everybody, business, you're not welcome here in New York City. So that's why you have businesses leaving New York. So Cortez, I am actually celebrating this because what'll happen is this gives Trump an opportunity to say, hey, look, the Dems, because she's a hero of the Dems.
The thing is the Republicans want her to be a hero of the Dems because she is so far on the left that a lot of people don't identify with her.
Right.
Doesn't mean she is a hero to the Dems. But right now she represents that the extreme position. That's why she gets more coverage on Fox News than all the other cable channels put together.
Right.
Because they want to put her up on
that same way CBS put Trump up. So Trump is an idiot for the 18 months when he's running.
CBS,
look at this guy's a big
put
fool.
Trump up?
They ran Trump more than anybody else. Of New York, of NBC and ABC, CBS was the one that was always had Trump leading during the campaign.
Those three networks were irrelevant. It's the cable stations, primarily Fox, but everybody else jumped on board too because they were ratings grabbers.
We'll get Sully in for 1 second. I'll just give you the libertarian position as to why you should never have businesses and government joined together. One, if you give Amazon a break, it's unfair to all the other tech people in New York City because they can't compete on the same level ground as Amazon because Amazon's getting a $3 billion
break. Size matters,
One,
I know.
Two, and then the other one is when it comes to the idea of if you want diversity, you don't want some big behemoth coming into your neighborhood and dominating. You want diversity of economics. So what the city should have done is cross the board tax cut of 2% to all businesses. All businesses.
Amazon wouldn't have come then.
Amazon doesn't matter. You don't need Amazon necessarily.
Okay.
I'm just saying
if you want
to increase businesses, give everybody a tax cut, allow them to reinvest and build. And the last part of the whole thing is that startups are the key. You don't want a great big one. You want startups. That's why Silicon Valley does well. It's not the big ones in Silicon Valley that drive it. It's all the startups that emerge from the bottom up from the big ones.
Okay, I'll take that. And I also would say Amazon, though, could have made this work in New York. They could work. There's no reason why they couldn't work with labor. There's no reason why they couldn't work with affordable housing. Jeff Bezos is now trying to work through Mary's Place to actually accommodate those kinds of things. Those were some of the concerns, it seems to me, that Amazon could have listened to the people that were protesting and determined how big how much they represented of the populace, and then work something out instead of just sort of pulling up stakes entirely.
I love the fact that they ran them out. Good for you. That's going to be a big thing in 2020.
Hey, Sully.
I got to be a big thing in 2020 as well.
Right.
And the rest of 19, I hope.
So, talking about the fact that we didn't hit our mark that was in the law as to how much the tolls needed to recoup, and now we're debating
changing the benchmarks. So basically, for just to reset the table briefly, when the express toll lanes on 405 went active in 2015, they were, under the law, were given 2 years as a pilot program to show whether or not this was the direction that the state should go when it comes to toll services. And one of the benchmarks was they need to make enough money to support the tolling system. And the second one was they need to provide a 45-mile-an-hour drive in the toll lane 90% of the time during peak hours.
Uh-huh.
And through the first 2 years, of which it was a pilot, it certainly made plenty of money, but it didn't reach that speed benchmark. So it was allowed to, it never really came up in the legislature about that. There were questions of whether it needed to meet benchmarks, both benchmarks fail, both benchmarks. There was a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. Either way, it never met that benchmark. And now through 3 years now, it still hasn't ever made that benchmark. The entire corridor runs 45 miles an hour, about 80%, 79 to 81%. So it's close. Certainly far better than it was when they just had an HOV lane, but we've got another lane in there. And it's made plenty of money. $75 million in 3 years, of which the operations are 25 mil. So it's made 50.
Where's the money going?
That money by law has to be reinvested in the 405 corridor. That's where we got the $11 million to add the shoulder driving northbound from Bothell. And that's where the legislature allowed them to start some early design and engineering work on what is the major problem for why they continue to fail that speed number is to add the other lane that they need between Bothell and Linwood. Because every morning from Linwood down to Bothell, it's hitting the 45 mile an hour average like 54 94% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so almost every other segment is hitting that mark of 90%, 45 miles an hour. But that one section just kills the curve and drags it down. So now what is happening in the legislature, a bill that's going to be heard next week, the Department of Transportation is asking the legislature to change the benchmark. Or at least widen the possibility. So instead of it saying, we could say, okay, we can go 45 miles an hour 90% of the time, or an alternate metric determined by the department in conjunction with the Federal Highway Administration. And so the outcry immediately came out, oh, you can't meet the benchmark, so we're going to change the benchmark. That's obviously what the opponents have said.
Right.
That kind of caused the fervor. So that's why we were talking about it. I went to the Department of Transportation, and there's no nefarious thing to this. They're not trying to change the goalposts because they can't reach the goalpost. It turns out, nationally, tolled facilities are having a very difficult time reaching that 45 miles an hour 90% of the time, not just here.
Uh-huh.
And so the Federal Highway Administration is toying with the idea of changing the benchmarks that kind of have the umbrella over the entire country. The DOT here locally said, listen, if they change that language to something, we want to make sure we're still in compliance, so we're adding this language so we'll be covered.
Some flexibility,
if the national changes. So there's nothing really nefarious here, but I you know, the headline is, oh, are they switching the rules to because they can't reach them? And so opponents say that's the case. The state says, no, that's not the case.
Okay.
But either way, I mean, that's the bottom line is that's what the issue is right now.
But we as a state, if we wanted to be better than the federal standard, it's not against the federal standard to be better.
No, not at all. But if they suddenly say we're going to go by the amount of cars you push through the corridor as opposed to an actual speed number or something, they want to have the flexibility to be in compliance.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, I mean, they are putting 23% more people through that corridor than before when we had tolls. And also, this comes at a time, this bill that I talked about here also talks about allowing and giving the authority to the state to expand our tolling facility, which we've known about for years. They're going to add that second lane between Bellevue all the way down to Renton and make a two-lane express toll lane there.
Uh-huh.
And then they're going to make the hot lanes all the way down to Puyallup a permanent facility. And then they're going to toll what we call the Gateway Project, which we have talked before, which is finally finishing 167 and taking it to I-5 through Puyallup and into Tacoma, which
Sully,
is going to be a toll
facility.
What do
the opponents of the toll say? You didn't hit the benchmarks, so therefore take the tolls away?
Yeah, most people are saying get rid of the toll lanes and let's open it up to the general purpose lane, which a lot of people say when the first, before we even started thinking about tolling, the way the expansion was put was, we're going to give you a new general purpose lane, but that never happened. That general purpose lane became an express toll lane.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, hey, get rid of these things. $10 is way too much. We shouldn't have to pay for roads we've already, you know, paid for.
So they're saying
taxes.
Get rid of the HOV and make four lanes for everybody.
That's what they would like to see, and get rid of the tolls as well. They want to open it up to everybody.
It'd be interesting to see if they just did that for 1 week or 2 weeks, what that would do. If you just got rid of the tolls, go away, HOV goes away, and you had all lanes and everybody gets
it. It would be interesting to see, and a lot of people say, let's see if that would work, but that could cause such a disruption to everyday drivers. You would, I don't know, but that would be one way to prove it, certainly, but no one has voiced a concern or voiced that said, hey, let's give it a go and have a real world test of it.
Yeah.
Tolls are here to stay.
Or an alternative would be to do a free everybody in, and then you don't raise the money to spend the money, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That we just make 7,000 more lanes, and then we just... No, I'm just kidding.
Not bad. We do have 23% more traffic, though, than before.
And we've had explosive growth through that area, too. So that's also contributing to why they probably aren't hitting that benchmark. And that part of our state has just grown ridiculously over the last 10 years.
Thank you, Sully. Appreciate it. Fast break. Come back. We'll talk about how active shooter drills are maybe not the best thing to do for kids in school. Right back.
Missing Rachel.
It's Friday. Alrighty. Laura's Home Loans. Get in touch with her. 833. Ask Laura. Laura's Home Loans. She's there for you. Give her a call. She'll tell you what to do when it comes to your home loans. It's Laura's Home Loans. 833. Ask Laura. There you go.
Can Trenchless be too far behind?
I'm telling you, let's not peg you. See what you've done there, Andrew?
Have I created something?
By the way, when you say she's there for you, you can go just about anywhere with that rhyme. That's the beauty of that one. All right, here we go. Active shooter. Charge him a little bit more for that.
Okay. That's not my job to charge.
Make a note. The active shooter drill has now become quite commonplace in schools all across America, and now people, The Atlantic has done a piece, a bunch of other people have looked at this stuff as well. Does this actually do anything for the school? Does it do for the students? And it seems the people that they've talked to, the experts, this actually could have a negative effect rather than a positive effect on everyone involved.
Lockdown, lockdown, lock the door, shut the lights off, say no more. That is literally what we are teaching our kindergartners to the tune of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star to incorporate this kind of school preparation for the worst possible outcome. Mm-hmm. The thrust of this article, this is a lengthy article that covers all sorts of philosophical grounds. I don't know how much we'll be able to cover. But the bottom line is that the scale of preparedness efforts is out of proportion to the risk. Mm-hmm. That this happens so seldom that if we really were most concerned about our kids, mm-hmm. we would be doing things like accident prevention, which kills a lot more kids than school shooters do.
Yeah.
There are health issues that are much more problematic. And the one of the thrusts of this article is that we are scaring the bejesus out of these kids. And what's the value of that? Now, the one little counter, I'm not arguing with the overall thrust. This is a very well-researched article. And again, it covers a lot of issues. But one of the things they said is this reminds them of back in the day when I was in school. John, you're a little bit younger than I am, so maybe you didn't do this. But the idea that we were getting prepared for nuclear war, we were getting under our desk in case the Russians decided to bomb us back to extinction. And that was an overreaction in retrospect because it wouldn't have done any good and it just scared us. Mm-hmm. I do not remember a moment of being scared like that.
Uh-huh.
I think the thing about kids is we don't understand. When you're 7 or 8, you don't understand the gravity of the world.
Right.
This is no different than a fire drill or, lining up in class to go to mass across the street when you're at Christ the King grade school.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that the psychological toll is as strong as what this writer is suggesting, but she is suggesting that we are scaring our kids in a way that's not going to help them in life, and it's only going to add to their extreme anxiety, and she cites all these statistics about how stressed kids are. That would be my one kind of cautionary note, but there are a lot of things in here that supports her stance.
Well, you just look at what happens, right? So a school shooting happens and then 400 parents show up at a school district meeting or something like that, demanding that something be done.
Mm-hmm.
Then the free market, it's being somewhat free, rushes in and there are 700 vendors available at this conference. There was 1,000 attendees. There was about 500 different vendors selling everything from bulletproof bulletin boards, right, to gunshot detecting hallway systems. They had whiteboards that were also bulletproof backpacks, everything. So you get the parents show up at the school. What are you doing to protect our kids? Because the media doesn't give you the facts, and the media makes it seem like because they need to sell adult diapers. Hold on. No. Tom, let me finish, and then you can tell me where I'm so wrong. The media wants to sell you adult diapers, so they run stories about how horrible it is, and this is happening every 15 seconds, another kid gets shot, and then they follow the numbers saying, there's 400 and some shootings in these schools. So you have the people sitting at home, they're concerned, they watch how the media portrays this, and they don't give you the real numbers on it, and because they need you to continue to keep watching, so they can sell you Cialis. And then you show up at the school board meeting saying, hey, this, the sky is falling, you've got to do something. So then the school district runs out and spends $400,000 on a shot detector or something. And now we get the idea that, hey, look at the money we've spent. Because if we didn't spend it and people told us to spend it, and God forbid, in a very rare occasion that it happens, a school shooting happens, we haven't done anything. That's the cycle of how this happens, Tom.
Okay.
Now, whether or not the kids are affected down the road, I don't know. We have to wait and find out about that.
Yes. But my point is that You could say the same thing about the media when it came to nuclear fallout.
Right.
And we didn't have the kind of media that we do now.
Right.
The idea that these kinds of concerns are real concerns,
yes,
because they do happen. But the problem is the probability of it happening is such that we're wondering if it's worth it. The problem with the nuclear war ideas, that would have saved us from anything climbing under our desk. But it did heighten
up. Duck and cover.
Yes. And we got people got bomb shelters and everything else. I mean, there are a lot of concerns, and a lot of people, you're right, maybe commercially cashed in. I just think it's too easy to sort of bash the media.
I'm not bashing. No, bashing.
Well, that sure sounds like it. Like you're thinking the media is not reporting the facts. They're twisting things so they can sell Cialis.
Right.
I don't think that's it. I think it's a reflection of our concern. Why did we have so much coverage when 9/11 happened? Mm. We went wall to wall on everything for like 5 or 6 or 7 straight days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not because the media was twisting things to make us really scared of terrorists when we shouldn't be scared of terrorists. There was a natural interest on the part of citizenry.
Yep.
And when something like that happens, we do want to know. Now, it could be our human impulse to want to know more than we should know or need to know, or maybe our desire to know things gets in the way of our understanding of how the world operates. But I don't know, just blaming the media. I think the media is a reflection of our own interests.
Fine.
Okay.
The media is in the business of telling stories. 35,000 flights land safely every day. A tire blows out on a United flight, and we get video of it, so it's the second story on NBC News.
No, that's the definition of news.
I know. It's the same thing with this. But if you to put it in perspective,
okay,
it's the same perspective that I always argue from this show, which is, hey, unarmed black kids being shot and killed by police. How many died last year? Well, the number is 17, according to the Washington Post. But if you were to ask the average person how many black unarmed kids are being shot by police, I don't know, 300, 400, 500, because what happens is, Tom, when you see the story repeated over and over again and no one actually gives you the numbers, because they don't want to give you the numbers because they want you to watch news. If you want to protect newspapers, how about television news? Will you at least give me the television news hypes and doesn't give you the actual numbers? Yes or no?
No, I would say no. I'm willing to defend all of our brethren. However,
right,
it's easier, I've got to admit, it's easier to defend our newspaper brethren than our broadcast brethren, because there's more time that can be spent in newspapers.
Right, because they're going to give you 1 minute and 30 seconds on a news story on television. They don't want to give you the facts.
But, John, as we all know, if that was all the news did, then we'd all be tabloids. Sex sells. You know, crime cells, mm-hmm, most of our journalism isn't all of that. It doesn't look like the National Enquirer, and that's why we can still call out the National Enquirer as an example of where we don't want to end up.
I don't know. It's a
But we got distracted. We shouldn't have been talking about the media. We should talk about this. One of the notions they introduce in this is adultification.
Mm.
And it's so funny, because what they say is, what we do is, first off, we protect our kids from everything. You know, the idea we're overprotecting them.
Not me.
Oh, don't make sure. I know, but in general, we've got to make sure that they're, you know, whatever playground use material is, they're not getting cancer from it.
Right.
They're not getting hurt. They have certain jungle gyms have to be very carefully controlled. So in some ways we're coddling kids, and at the same time we're adultifying them by saying,
yeah,
you've got to help us. Hey, when somebody comes in with a machine gun, you got to help us block the door and not say a word.
Lock down, lock no more.
Right. The idea is that we're forcing kids to grow up too fast and not fast enough.
It's the same lie as Stranger Danger. The media continues to tell the stories. They're not true. We'll be right back.
Parents tell those stories too, though.
I know. They saw it on the news or on Facebook. Online Trade Academy text line, 98973, 98973. Things to look forward to today. 10:30, I think Rachel's coming in. 11:35. No.
It's a Friday.
Fresh, you know Friday? She's like Johnny Carson in later years. And then that happened to the know-it-all quiz. That hasn't been canceled, has it?
No, that we're doing.
All right, okay, fine. All right.
As soon as it's written.
I wrote it.
Oh, good.
Jacob, did I not write it?
You've written 4 questions.
I always do that, don't I? And then I make you do the last one. It's good for it. It's good exercise for you. I did this to Jacob yesterday. I said, hey, you know, find me a studio down in San Francisco so I can do the show down there and then do this auction.
Ah,
it'd be a fun assignment for you. I added in there fun assignment. That's what my dad would say. Why don't you stack a cord of wood? It'd be kind of fun for you.
Like, see how quickly you can do it.
Right. You're strong. Okay, a guy goes to Outback Steakhouse and decides he wants to con everybody. So he sits at a table and he says things loud enough either on the phone or to himself that others around can hear.
On Valentine's Day. That's the important thing.
Right.
So everybody is coupled up at this restaurant, and everyone is valentining it, and he orders the bottle of Chardonnay, because that's his girlfriend Catherine's favorite kind of wine, and he waits there, and he waits there, and he waits there, and she never shows up. Mm-hmm. And he's getting sadder and sadder and sadder.
Right.
He eats all the bread. It is so clear to everyone else who's in this kind of Valentine's Day mood that he is being stood up, and they feel worse and worse and worse about him.
Okay. People around him hear him on the phone talking to his girlfriend, saying, "Hey, where are you? I'm here. I don't know where you are." And then after enough of this, and does he tweet things out as well that he's sitting
by himself? This is the whole ruse.
Okay.
He's doing this as a joke, as a gag.
Uh-huh.
He says, "Wouldn't it be funny if I went," because he didn't have a date, "what if I went and pretended I have a date?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if I would be such a sad sack that somebody would actually pay for my dinner, a steak dinner." And so his sister says, "Yeah, you should do that. That would be hilarious. You could tweet it out." So he live streamed the entire experience, and his sister said, "Do it, and I will pay. If you end up having to pay for it, I'll end up covering it." So he says, so basically it was a free meal.
Mm-hmm.
Either my sister was going to pay for it, or somebody in the restaurant was going to pay for it. And he talked about how sympathetic the waiter was to him. And he finally, right before the kitchen closed, he ordered his own meal, and she never showed up. And finally, at the end of this, and he's tweeting out all these funny things, and people are thinking it's hilarious. A couple in there, he says, there were at least 60. A couple said, "You know, it's okay, son. Don't let it get to you. You know, I've covered for your dinner and stuff." And so he managed to sucker a sweet 60-year-old couple.
Did he take the money?
Paying for his, yeah, you bet he did. I mean, he didn't. They paid for it. There was no money exchanging hands, but they covered for it. And they had a very sympathetic waiter, and they were all kind of patting him on the back. "Come on, you're better than this, or you can get over this, and things will be looking up." And so then, and that's it. And people loved it. They thought this was the cleverest damn thing.
Whoa. People love that he fooled everybody?
Because he was such a good actor. To me, the guy is a number one jerk, I guess. Because he's preying on people's honest emotions. It's the kind of thing, it's the kind of experiment, John, that you would set up because you're convinced that people are jerks, and I'm convinced people are great people.
I'm not convinced that people are jerks.
Do you think we're suckers?
No.
Okay.
No,
well,
people
anyway.
Behave in their own self-interest. A lot of people, Tom, that go to Red Robin, it's not their birthday. But if you don't check and you say, because we do it all the time, "Hey, you know how many times we celebrated Rye's birthday at Red Robin?"
Well, you should be ashamed of yourself.
No,
John,
because
Shirley.
I'm in the majority where people will do
maybe
stuff.
Maybe so.
Yes.
But the problem is people like this guy will turn people like me into cynics like you by saying, "Here, I thought I was doing this guy a favor, and all the time he was laughing at my generosity."
Absolutely. And that's the one thing that actually helps us as a society. Every once in a while, it makes us
cynical.
A little bit more suspicious. The greatest lesson we learned from those three people that pulled the big rouge on us when it came to the homeless thing, right?
Ruse, okay.
Right, was that, he took his last $20 and he got gas for the lady, and those people threw $500,000, whatever amount of money they threw at these three people, you guys got fooled. It's good to be able to, every once in a while, have some jerk like this remind us that we just need to be a little better about before we hand out stuff. That's all.
Stephen Bonzer, you were called a jerk by John Curley.
He's got 525 followers on Twitter, and he follows 238 people.
I thought he also took the money that he got and donated it to a charity.
Well, no, what he said is
he did.
He guessed that it was going to be about $50 that the couple spent, so he gave it to, I think, ACLU, so bad karma wouldn't haunt him for the rest of his life, like it's haunting John Curley.
It doesn't haunt me. I don't mind.
I know, that's the problem.
By the way, it is good that you've started to realize people are people.
Knowing you, John.